Okay, thank you, Eberhard, for organizing this very, very, very nice program. I hope you're enjoying it here for some 10 days. Okay, so I didn't know I was supposed, I'll give a talk. So when I came here, Eberhard said, asked me for a title or something, so I have to. So this is something that we just mostly done by Xiao Zheng Zhao, he's a MPhil student, okay, and we are still he just graduated, but we're still analyzing some of the results and so on. So it has not been published. So this is a very very informal talk, and if I get to the second part. The second part, actually, it was just this morning when Gunther asked me, I was discussing with him in his lab, he said, are you going to talk about the polymer thing? And when I came back, hastily put it together, and so a lot of...
you're fast.
No, some material already there, but... okay, so it's another small work. Okay, so... as the title suggests, free slip boundary condition, okay? And I guess most of you don't need the introduction about the Rayleigh-Bernard system. That's the model system. We study thermal convection, and Gunther has given a very nice talk last week, and that was convection folks weeks in March and April, so there's not much introduction needed. So that's the typical configuration we use, a cylinder you heat from bottom and cool on the top, and you have that's the governing equations, right? Basically it's Navier-Stokes plus the buoyancy term, okay, that assuming the only the density change as a result of heating, and assume other parameters are not changing. That's the Bosinisk approximation. So this are also called Bosinisk equations. This is an incompressibility condition, and that's heat transport equation. Okay, so you have three control parameters, the Rayleigh number, which measures the strength of a buoyancy driving force over the dissipative force, and the Prandtl number basically tells you the relative length scale of the thermal boundary layer and the viscous boundary layer, and the aspect ratio, which controls the effects flow configurations, flow patterns. Okay. Then you have two response parameters. One is the Nusselt number, which measures how much the heat transfer has been enhanced by convection as versus diffusion. And the Reynolds number is also a response parameter here. So a most important question here people ask is what happens at very high Rayleigh number, your heat transfer. Okay.
What is U in your Rayleigh, in your Reynolds number? This is a fluctuating part one. It's a wind velocity.
Well, it's you can use anything. It's not specified. If you use RMS, that's yeah. So here.
The Nusselt number. What is Kai?
That's the semiconductivity. So this is the kind of flux you would expect. This denominator is the flux you would expect if there is a pure diffusion, pure conduction, right?
It's the same as kappa.
Sorry?
It's the same as kappa.
Yeah, I'm sorry. The no, this is the conductivity. This is the thermal diffusivity. So this is a difference in divide. That's the conductivity by the density. And the thermal heat capacity. Okay, so now I just introduced a little bit about the system. Okay, so there are several so-called characteristic regions. You have a boundary layer, and you have the region where you have plumes emitted just outside the boundary layer and they get mixed, the so-called mixing zone. And then you have this core region, which is mostly homogeneous isotropic, as far as the so-called small-scale properties are concerned. So if we calculate small-scale properties of like structure functions and so on, what you get is more or less the same as you get from a homogeneous isotropic turbulence. So those are the three regions, boundary layers and the mixing zone plumes. The plumes, they also organize themselves to become the so-called large-scale circulation, which is itself becomes a very interesting subject. It's a very fascinating structure, and it has many the features like what you find in sort of low-dimensional dynamic systems. You have oscillation of the thing, and it can reverse itself suddenly, and so on. So there are many studies, and Gunther here and his group has done a lot in large-scale circulation. Okay. So as I said, the one of the sort of key issues in the study of thermal convection is its relevance to astrophysical and geophysical applications. So you're asking what is the heat transfer in those large objects in which the Rayleigh number is huge. So the Rayleigh number in those geophysical and astrophysical objects are like 10 to the 20 and above. That's the estimation. And the natural question is what we do here in the lab, okay, in very small scale, right, comparing to those objects. Is there any relevance to those large objects? So the question now comes down is, does this turbulent convection exist a asymptotic state? Okay, if there is an asymptotic state, then you can extrapolate your results, knowledge that you learn in on Earth, and extrapolate to large scale things. Okay, so that's the very fundamental question, and there are a lot of studies. Okay, so about 50 years ago, in fact, Robert Krechman argued that when the Rayleigh number becomes very large, the system becomes very, very turbulent. And in that case, the boundary layer itself, which in most the case that we have studied in the lab are lamina, will become turbulent. The breakdown become turbulent, then the heat transport will not be limited by viscosity and some diffusivity, the molecular coefficients in the boundary layers. They will be basically transported by the turbulent flow ballistically. So you have those plumes you imagine will just shoot up from the boundary. Okay, and that has since been called the so-called ultimate regime in turbulent convection. Okay, so if you ignore some logarithmic correction, okay, and the Krechman's regime predicts, or his model predicts that the Nusselt should scale as one half power of Rayleigh. Okay, and up to now, in most laboratory experiment with standard Rayleigh-Barnard configuration, solid boundaries, people have observed one third. Okay. Now, there are no sort of fixed, well-defined so-called critical Rayleigh number about which this ultimate regime is back to occur. You know, a question basically says it's very large when its Rayleigh number is sufficiently large. And this so-called critical Rayleigh number also depends on the Prandtl number. Okay. So,
and there are different estimates.
So if you take some estimates which basically put this number at 10 to the 13 to 10 to the 14, for Prandtl number equals to 1. Okay? Now there are.
Theta regime means that the flux is independent of thermal diffusivity.
Yes, and so the molecular coefficient, the diffusivity and viscosity. Okay, so you can see here there are various results here, and none of them has shown the so-called one-half ultimate regime. Okay, so this in this work, which spanned about 10 decades of Rayleigh number, probably one of the experiment with largest experiment, the parameter range in terms of the Rayleigh number, okay, and they have showing compensated plot for different compensations, and you can see that what it found is that up to 10 to the 17, the exponent is about 0.3 rather than 0.5, okay. And of course, you can argue that many of those early experiments, in order to achieve the high Rayleigh number, they use low temperature helium gas, okay, near like 5 Kelvin. And near that temperature, it's very close to the critical temperature of the helium gas. So that the Prandtl number, you can see, is not constant. And this parameter alpha times delta T is a measure of the how good your system is close to the Bosonic condition. And when it shoots up, becomes very large, you deviate from the Bosonic condition. And you can see from here that for this work, basically beyond 10 to the 14, I believe, that their experiment were not done under constant Prandtl number, nor under strictly Bosonic conditions. Okay, so those results has some kind of a problem, one sort or the other. Okay, so that's one problem. Now there is a recent experiment done in Göttingen by Gunther and Eberhard and Denis Fongstrom. They did it in I think they published the results in 2009. Okay, so what they have done differently is using high pressurized gas, SF6, as Eberhard already talked about. And you can see that their Prandtl number in this way can be kept fairly constant. And they used a number of gases, not just SF6, to really expand the Rayleigh number range. So believe those are for different type of gases, and those are for different results. I believe this symbol is from this work by Nimila et al. Is that, if I'm not right, Gunther can correct me. And these crosses are by Chavan et al. Right? And so this is a result is compensated by Rayleigh number to the 0.3 power, and roughly you can say up to 10 to the 14, you don't see any transition to the Krechner regime with x1 1/2. So the and of course they have pushed their Rayleigh number up since. Okay, and I will not talk about that. So the I think we can say that up to now there is no convincing evidence, okay, that the Krechner regime exists. Okay, and there are some other type of studies, both experiment and numeric, which found a scaling exponent of about 1/2. Between Nassau and Rayleigh, but they are not under this standard Rayleigh-Barnard configuration. Okay, for example, Lose and Toski did the bulk turbine convection, right? using periodic boundary conditions on the top and bottom, and therefore remove the boundary altogether. And they found, you know, this is compensated by one half. They found the so-called, you know, the skinning. I wouldn't say if that's called, can be called Krychenian regime. It's they found the 0.5 scaling. Okay, and you have this work by Castan co-workers, which they put some obstacles in the middle of the convection cell, and they argue that the convection in the central region is inertial driven, so without basically remove the boundaries. And they found a skinning exponent of a Rayleigh versus a 0.5 between Nassau and Rayleigh. Okay. And
but in this case, Rayleigh number was defined according to the plates.
No, it's I believe it's
the difference in the central region which fluctuates.
Yeah.
How about defined here is
now? I think
the measure.
They measured the temperature profile, I believe. They measured the temperature profile, I think. Yeah.
But wait a minute. The Rayleigh number ordinarily is defined in terms of a length which is constant, a property of the geometry. Mm-hmm. They measure a length based on the thermal gradient and mm-hmm. the thermal fluctuations, which is itself Rayleigh number dependent. So getting one half out of that combination isn't anything like Krychenian.
Yeah. So I would not say any of this showed Krychenian regime. Okay. And we have measured the local flux. Okay. It's not the local Nassau number. Again, because you don't know how to define the temperature difference, right? You need for the Nassau number, you need to normalize it with a, but what we found, the local flux has an exponent which is you know, close to 0.5, and you can of course also argue that that of course we are not claiming it's the Krychenian regime, because it is in the ordinary Rayleigh Bonnard cell you measure the local flux. Okay, it basically says the local flux, you know, not in the boundary layer region. We can measure local flux also in the boundary layer region with much lower exponent. Okay. And this work is using the plates which has some roughness, and they also obtained a again, it's low temperature helium gas, and they obtained the exponent which is 0.5. Okay, if I remember correctly. Okay, so it seems that the so-called Krychenian regime, if you associate that with the exponent 1/2, may be realized only when you do not have the top and bottom walls. Okay, so this basically prompted us to this experiment that I'm going to talk about today. So we have three layers of fluid. Okay, on the top is the water, then in the middle is this fluid. It's a fluorinate fluid. It's used by the semiconductor industry for cleaning something, but it's not the it's difficult to buy them anymore, I think, because they contain fluorine and maybe not good for the ozone.
You can buy it.
You can still buy. Okay.
From 3M.
Yeah, we bought it from 3M, but it's recently, and I think they somehow they stopped the shipping it to Hong Kong. I don't know why. It's related to the shipping problem, safety, whatever.
We just bought a whole bucket full.
Okay, so we but we still have some. If we don't know, we can, you know, borrow it from you. And the bottom is mercury, okay. And the hope is that we'll, you know, we remove the top and the bottom plate, right? Replace it with the liquid, and therefore we create a free slip boundary condition, Okay, so that's the idea, the hope at least. Okay, and we.
You still have 77, right? Or just to have different liquids?
Yeah, you can see it's 70% more heavier than water. Okay.
It has 10 times less conductivity.
Yeah, its conductivity is also 10 times that of.
That's good.
Yeah.
Which is good, yeah, for this.
Yeah, yeah. So because you want the top bottom to have higher conductivity. Okay. So we put some tiny thermistors to measure the temperature profile across the interface. And that's the main measurement, because you need to determine the interface temperature to estimate the heat transfer across the boundary layer and also the the Rayleigh number of this layer. So this one is used to measure temperature profile at this interface, and that one is used to measure that interface. Okay. And you can see that for this FC77, that's sort of our object of study, the aspect ratio is 1. Okay. And then I've shown you some picture of the apparatus. So this is the convection cell. Okay, so
the lower layer was how thick? 0.3 millimeters or 3 millimeters?
3 millimeter. 3 millimeter.
Why did you choose 3 millimeters?
Yeah, we just wanted it to be thin. Actually, we tried thick one. Sorry?
Why not 2? Because you still wanted to flow.
It's very difficult to
it's very difficult, yeah.
Yeah, very difficult to have this too thin.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
Yeah. So we try to make it as thin as possible. Okay. Yeah. So this is a convection cell is when it's empty it's has aspect ratio slightly smaller than 1, right, without it. And it sit in some insulation, and we have a copper basin, which is heated to have the mean temperature at that of the bulk to reduce heat leakage. Then we wrap it up like this, and this is a thermostat box. Those are the doors. So we close it and keep it at a constant temperature for heat transport measurement. Okay, so that's. So this is what you obtain as a mean temperature profile from a fluid with a solid plate. Okay. So this is also the FC77. Okay, and that's the mean temperature. And from this, if you using the Euro method, you can extrapolate the linear region near the wall, and the intersection between this and the that's the bulk temperature defines the thermal boundary layer thickness. Okay, so in this case, it's about 0.5 millimeter. So you can see the RMS temperature has a peak. Also near the thermal boundary layer, you know, not exactly here because this also depends on definition. And you can also use this as an indication of the thickness of a thermal boundary layer. Okay, this is a somewhat scattered because for RMS you really need to measure it very long. So now let me first show you the profile we obtained from the mercury FC77 interface. Okay, so that's from mercury, that's mercury part, and then we go, that's the F77. Okay, and you can see that the RMS here is very small, so that's RMS in the mercury part. So essentially, we don't see any fluctuations, that's, and we have other indication that that layer is very thin and essentially it's just a conduction. Okay. And you can see there is a peak here in the RMS in the FC77 part, so that's close to the thermal boundary layer of the F77.
What is z equals 0? The origin of the z scale.
Oh, this is arbitrary. Show.
Where's the mercury liquid and
the interface?
Where's the interface?
Okay, I'll show you in the next.
Yeah, but on this graph.
Somewhere here.
Somewhere there.
Yeah, here.
So does it matter whether you bring in the thermistor from above or you pull it out of the mercury?
We try to wait some time, and that's not
the there's no misreleases in the measurement, whether you go down or whether you go up, you get the same answer.
No, we try.
You get the same answer.
Yeah, but there are some sort of deformation when your thermistor touch the interface. So and you have
arrows, you go down and up.
That's not, yeah.
One day, another time you push it in, so.
There's a little bit, because you tend to push a little bit, yeah. Okay. So that's the Prandtl number. You can see it's much higher than what you obtain in water. Now, those time traces here, A, B, C, D corresponding to these positions. And you can see in C and D, it's just normalized by their IMS. You only see some random small fluctuations in the mercury part. And B here, it's just at the FC77 part, because the interface is here. Okay. And A is you're just coming out of the FC77 summer boundary layer, and you see many plumes, hot plumes. Okay, so this is the lower boundary of the F77 layer. You see hot plumes coming up. Okay. And if you look at the FC77 and water interface, okay, again, that's FC77, okay, and you see a large peak in the RMS temperature fluctuation just outside the summer boundary layer. The summer boundary layer is somewhere here. And then you see this in the water. Okay. And fluctuations are very small, just random fluctuation. And here you can see a lot of the cold plumes, signature of cold plumes, downward going temperature spikes. Okay. Now, here is the, we put the two profiles together. Okay, so this is from the mercury, okay, and this is from the FC77. This line here is a horizontal line, which is set at the bulk temperature, because we also put the probe at the middle of F77 and measure that temperature. That's the center temperature or bulk temperature of the F77, and this temperature is the same as this temperature. So this is the F77 and the water. Okay, so this is F77 and that's mercury. Of course, there is a big thick layer, right? So that's the bulk temperature too. And this line has a slope which is consistent with the some conductivity of mercury. Okay, and this line has a slope which is consistent with the semiconductive water. Okay, and you can see that this line has a slope. This two in theory, these two lines should have the same slope, which is consistent with the gives you the conductivity of FC77, and indeed they are very close. You know. Not identical, but very close, and consistent with some conductivity at 77. Okay.
So this means that the temperature drop across the F77 is still completely determined by the temperature drop across the two boundary layers.
Mm-hmm.
There's no gradient in the bulk.
No gradient in the bulk. You can see that's the what you get.
It's the same.
So it's basically like what you have in a Rayleigh Bernard, but with okay, and you can get a boundary layer sort of a thickness here from the, you know, the same construction I showed in the between plate, right? The bulk temperature and the slope.
It's not anything like Fresnel. Well, Trachin has to have the grating in the bulk, right? There's nothing else.
Yeah. Well, it was a nasal number.
Federico.
Yeah.
And the numerics.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me finish. And yeah, you cannot get rid of the boundary layer experimentally, right? You're just trying to mimic or bring your system close to more slave-free, okay? And you know, here you do have some in theory that the mercury is conduction, right? So you should have a temperature all the way somewhere to here. That's the interface, and you have some, and when the probe across the boundary, it somehow push the push some liquid or bring some liquid down, and also here a little bit. And in fact, these are very, very difficult experiments. And it took us like a year and a half, so on, to measure these profiles, of course, for different Rayleigh number, and so on. And some of these are very small steps. I think all these are 50 micron steps. Okay. Okay, so this after you determine the boundary layer and the interface temperature, you can get the Rayleigh number of the F77 layer. Okay, so the circle here, that's just a single layer F77. Okay, so that's like a control experiment for aspect ratio 1. And what you get here is the exponent, the 0.26 something. Okay, and then this is the nozzle you get for the F77 layer in the three layer experiment, and you can see clearly there appears to be two regions, and so we fit the two regions, and we get.
Why do you get 0.26? I mean, other fluids typically give 0.30 or 0.31 in this Rayleigh number range.
No, it also depends on the Prandtl number, right?
No.
The Prandtl number is kind of high.
That's too low.
Well, we get 2.6, 2.7 for our high Prandtl number experiment before, like when it was
really?
200.
10 to the 10 and 10 to the 11?
Yeah, roughly. In
that disagrees with Grossman-Loza.
Not in this Prandtl number region.
But it does.
Yeah. And also, the exponent also depends on the the range of the Rayleigh number, and this is only about a decade. Yeah. But we have, you know, even for water. Not 10 to 11, maybe 10 to the 8, 10 to the 10, obtained the exponent, sometimes you can get 2.7, you know, 2.6. It's only when it's very high, it approaches the one-third, okay? So here is the compensate result, and you can clearly see a transition, okay, at somewhere 2 times 10 to the 10. Okay, and the exponent is 0.38.
Why would it be 0.31 and not 0.26?
Sorry?
I mean, you're saying that the exponent changes because free versus rigid boundary conditions, you make such a big change in the exponent?
Mm-hmm.
That's a big change.
Well, it is a big change, and also the amplitude is much higher. Okay, but it's not the as what the as Krechnin predicts, right? But that's without the, you can see if you can totally remove the boundary.
What I'm saying is that if you go down to 10 to the 10, don't go to very high Rayleigh numbers. If you just go to 10 to the 10, around 10 to the 10, there's already a huge difference between free and rigid boundary conditions.
Mm-hmm.
Huge. I mean, it's,
yeah.
You get much more heat going through, and the slope is steeper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but we cannot change this unless we make another apparatus. You know, we use this.
It's just that somehow the steel is more turbulent.
Yeah.
Should be.
Yeah.
Boundary conditions.
Sure.
It's unstable from the beginning.
Yeah.
The pattern formation is unstable from the beginning.
Yeah.
It's never stable.
Yeah. Well, you can also say that the boundary is it's more turbulent. No, it is partially free slip.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, and I'll show you the evidence. Okay, so that's the result we got by measuring the temperature profile. Okay, and we can also essentially argue that the water and the mercury layers are conduction. Okay, so we can measure the temperature of the interface, or we can infer the temperature interface by do a linear extrapolation, okay, using the superconductivity of mercury and the water, okay, because we...
Since we are in an informal session, Federico, when you do free boundary conditions, which is easier to simulate, right, because the symmetry of the equations is such that you can use a Fourier transform for it, right?
What do you mean, if you wonder if it's neat?
Yeah, what the difference is between free slip and fixed?
That's a good question. I mean, the simulation I did many years ago. I remember that you get a larger mass of the, but I will not be able to see any more.
But it was
there was some difference in the scaling exponent.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this is even more complicated because the amount of slip may also depend on the Reynolds. So on the Rayleigh, so but the system is completely different instead from the periodic one, of course.
Yeah.
No, it's not periodic. I'm not talking
periodic. Periodic is completely.
Just take a sine transform.
Let's say in general, if you reduce the friction with the walls, at least the refractor Nusselt will go up. So.
Yeah.
I mean, with the pseudospectral code, you don't have to do anything special to the boundaries because you can just use the sine transform or the cosine transform.
Oh, okay.
And throw away all the other components, right? And then you get, because it's a natural symmetry of the problem,
yes,
right?
So what we are going to get is for sure a larger Nusselt.
For sure, larger Nusselt.
And about the scaling, I remember for simulation 2 years ago, and not with the statistics, I couldn't see the difference in the scaling exponent. But I mean, I would like to see it better. But this system here may be even more complicated because the boundary condition will be dependent on the flow conditions.
But you do see, in this case, you do see a big change in the exponent. It's not 1/2, but much larger. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so from the profile, okay, and also the temperature series, you can assume that the mercury and water layer are just pure conduction, okay. And let's make that assumption, and therefore we can just measure the temperature at the plate, okay? And using conductivity of the two fluids, and you obtain the temperature of the interface, and therefore the Rayleigh number of FC77 layer, and you know the heat flux you supplied, it has to be conserved across the two interfaces, and you can get a Nusselt number.
So what you're saying is that in the shallow layers you have 2D, it's not two-dimensional. There's no Z dependence. I mean, it has to flow, right? Because you have free slip boundary conditions.
Yeah, you maybe very close.
Shear flow.
Yeah, very close, but you can see here, right? It's that's the pretty thickly of the mercury, and you can see it's just conduction, okay, and also the water, okay, and from the time trace you can see here, there's no the R mass. You don't see a peak, and the fluctuations much small in the water compared to the F77 and also the so. Okay, so of course. It's you can see it's a assumption. We have some evidence. So now, if we use that assumption, we can also get a Nusselt number, and that's what this solid line, those circles showed you. Okay, And there are also some transition, okay, deviation, but we didn't fit this. And you get this also for the accuracy and the short range of the Rayleigh number, it's also 0.38. And that's a compensated plot. Now, you put the two results together. Okay, so one is the from the direct profile measurement, and this solid dots are by assuming conduction in the top bottom layer, okay, and that's what you get, and that's the Nusselt number, that's a compensated. So you can see that appears to be a systematic error here, and we think one possible source is actually very difficult to measure the thickness of the thin water and the mercury layer. For the mercury, it's okay because the thermal conductivity is so high. Okay, so the temperature gradient is small. But for the water, the temperature gradient, you know, slope is large. And the thickness is only 3 millimeter water layer. Okay, but the error bar could be 1 millimeter. So if it's 2 millimeter, and it can easily explain this. You know, because it's near the wall there, you know, or the edge, and so it's actually very difficult to have. It's not in the middle of something you can really accurately measure.
Probably would need ultrasounds and reflect it, measure the critical angle or something.
Yeah, if I have that. Yeah. Anyway, basically it tells you that the, you know, you assume the two layers are pure conduction, it's not a bad, well, you get some number, and the trend reasonably agree in agreement with the profile measurement. And you do have some systematic shift, okay. So that's what you, and we can also measure the thermal boundary layer thickness. Okay. As I told you that that's a bulk temperature, and that's the like temperature profile. Okay, that's the interface. So if you imagine that's the solid wall, then this will be a conventional thermal boundary layer thickness measurement in this tool. And if you measure the thermal boundary layer thickness, again, you can use two methods. One is the slope, the other is using the peak position of this, the RMS temperature profile. Remember, there's a peak, okay? And so here the figure looks like complicated, okay? So you have the square here, that's what you get from the one layer result, okay? One layer, single layer F77, you get the thermal boundary layer as function of Rayleigh number, and this dot here is the three-layer top boundary. So that's the boundary layer between the water and F77. Okay, and the circle is the bottom, which is between the mercury and the F77. Okay, and here is the RMS. You get similar. And what you see is here, there is, again, at this is about 4-5 times 10 to the 10. And you have a sudden, very steep decrease of the thermal boundary layer thickness, the boundary layer thickness in the F77K, but not in the mercury F77.
These two liquids, water and mercury, have very different probe numbers, right? I mean, one probe number is like 0.1 or
0.0 something.
0.0 something.
Yeah, 0.02.
And the
yeah.
Other one is probably 4 or 10.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a huge difference in the dynamic thermal properties.
Yeah. True.
And the kinematic.
Yeah. So the two certainly are not the same. Yeah. Should not be the same. And you see the different behavior. But somehow in the F77 and water interface, and you can see there is a signature that the, you know, this kind of slope, 1.4, right, both 1.4 something, is extremely, it just means it's going to break down. So you can take that as signature that that's the onset that the boundary layer is going to break down. It's going to, you know, become, with this huge exponent, it just drop to zero quickly if you go on.
This does not show up in the Nusselt number.
It does not show up. Well, in Nusselt number, you also show, because the Nusselt number.
Can we look back at Nusselt?
Yeah.
Yeah,
no. Here is only for one interface, not for both. And the Nusselt number is limited by, yeah, by both, you know, not exactly Rayleigh number, but also this 2 times 10 to the, yeah. But in the bulk part is around this region. You see the, yeah, the Nusselt increase, you know, and you, of course, you can argue that because in this case, the two boundaries, the two interfaces, are not, do not have the same behavior. Okay, so your one boundary probably you see a transition, whatever, to Kretschmann regime or what have you, and the other is not, and therefore you see a Nusselt which is a you know much larger than what you have in the single layer case, but still not reaching 0.5. Okay. Yes?
Do you see wavy motion at the interfaces?
We don't see wavy.
Because there's a density difference at the top was 0.7 or something like that, right? Can you estimate, for instance, the Richardson number?
Sorry?
At the interfaces, you have two interfaces. At
yeah.
the top, you had a density difference of 0.7 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
At the bottom, the density difference was 10 or something like that.
Yeah.
Can you estimate the Richardson number based on the turbulence that you have?
Sorry, estimate what number?
What is the effect of the stable stratification and the interaction with the waves that you can form?
What? Sorry, I didn't catch the word.
Some number.
A Richardson number. I don't know what's that.
I would say that it oscillates. I mean, if you have the two-layer system and you agitate it from below, at the interface, you start to form waves if the turbulence is strong enough. And I guess that then...
How big would be the wave? I mean, can you observe it with the eye?
I'm asking for the Richardson number. What is the RMS that you have close to the interfaces? What is the velocity RMS?
We haven't measured that. And we are measuring the velocities and the large scale flow in the system now. Because when we did this experiment, we wanted to make everything altogether, but we found out that in fact the temperature profile is very difficult and so on. It's would be more difficult to put all the thermistor on the wall and everything to measure the LSC. But we are making that right now.
A classical problem, you can estimate the RMS and make an estimate of the Richardson number.
Mm-hmm.
Just to see how strong the oscillations of the interface is going to be. Because in the end, you have only 3 millimeters on the top, right?
Well, if you see the oscillation, certainly it's not the order of a few millimeter. Otherwise, you can see. I mean, you can see where it's stable.
You calculate the slope in the profile with the water, with the interior. It is not as steep as with mercury. And maybe the fact that the density.
No. They have different semiconductivity.
Yeah. But on top of that. It might also influence the fact that you have a stronger oscillations in the interface with the water because the density difference is not as strong.
Mm-hmm.
You measure the mean of the oscillating motion.
Yeah.
I guess it's
difficult. Yeah, we try to. In fact, we try to not in this setup, but also F77 water, but more bulk type. It's difficult to measure the velocity field because I think what you refer is the RMS velocity, the vertical RMS velocity. That will tell you the interface, not the horizontal, right? So you need really.
Yes.
Yeah, and we haven't been able to get seeding, you know, particles in the FC77. You know, if we can, we'll be able to do PIV measurement. That would answer your. Yeah. And if we just put like probes on the sidewall, like Gunther does for large scale circulation, I don't think that will answer the vertical RMS near the interface. That you really to need to resolve the velocity field near.
So yeah. How you can get that? If even if there is no vertical fluctuation and you create a shear there,
mm-hmm.
based on that horizontal motion, there is a critical value for the retracement lambda to promote
a wing. Okay.
Probably some estimate can be.
Okay, something to think about. Okay, so. Yeah, so that's the result, I think. That sharp drop in the thermal boundary layer thickness, okay. You can take it as a sign that the maybe boundary layer become turbulent, you know, vanishing. Okay, so this is certainly we have different boundary conditions, okay, and one is probably more slip than the other. But I think it's we need a better way to characterize the boundary layers. And maybe numeric and DNS, you can do a much better job. Yes?
Increasing the viscosity of your water, this glycerol, might not be, or is it too heavy? It would fall probably, right? You need to keep the density low.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Yeah. But you can increase to, but if you, you know, if you change it, you may the interface you may create some mixing or interdiffusion. Yeah, it's okay. I think as time is just I can just stop here.
Well, I mean, we want to hear the polymer data.
Yeah.
You're not here for the polymer workshop, right?
I'm not here.
Can you make a 7-minute talk?
I think I can. You know, that one's.
Whoever wants to meet is allowed to meet. Let's do it 7 minutes. Okay.
Okay. So.
Race car.
Okay. So that's a question. You know, what's the? I think in a way related to you. The what happens in the two thin layers? Okay. It's if you estimate the critical Rayleigh numbers, the Rayleigh number may not be that small to justify pure conduction, but we don't know. Okay, so the polymers, there are already some experiment. You know, the experiment work is done by Gunther here already. He published last year. And we also started doing this, but we are always slower than Gunther and cannot compete with him. So try to do something a little bit different. And there are theory by Banzhe, Qing, and DeAngelis. They have some model about the stretching of the polymer in the bulk, and also they did DNS, basically a bulk convection DNS. So you can see the conclusion here is in the experiment, what you found is when you add polymers, the nozzle will decrease, but in theory, the nozzle will increase. Okay. Okay, so that brings up our experiment. Okay, so we have decided to make measurement in two types of cell, one with smooth surface, the other with rough surface. Okay. And the picture here is actually not exactly the cell we use for the polymer experiment, which were aluminum and coated with Teflon. And this we learned from Gunther, because the polymer stick on the metal and you have the coating with Teflon. But the otherwise they are the same. Okay. So the and we were motivated by another little experiment we did. I will not have time to talk about it. So we have the smooth and the rough, and we can also have two different combinations. So we have four sort of configuration. Okay. So the result basically is what you found here. I don't know if you can see. That's the both top and bottom are rough, and both are smooth. And you can see this is why is the two here, two data sets, half rough, half smooth.
No polymers here?
No polymers, it's not, no polymers at all. Okay, then the GL model says that if you are in bulk, you know, your dissipation is boundary layer dominated, both thermal and viscous boundary dominated regime, you have this type of scaling. And if you have bulk dominated, both thermal and viscous, bulk dominated, you have this. So now we can fit our, you know, this is a log plot, they look like straight line, but actually you can fit them with a combined power law. Okay, one is this quarter scaling in the boundary dominated regime, the other is bulk dominated regime. Then you have this four configurations, okay, and you can say basically C2 is the coefficient for the bulk dominated, and you can see as you go from both smooth to half rough, half smooth to both rough, this ratio increases, and also you can see the coefficient increase a lot. Okay, so basically it tells you that if you put your boundary layer rough, it will reduce dissipation in the boundary layer, and the dissipation will become more bulk dominant. Of course, this is not like what you do as bulk DNS. There you can do, you know, you can really have switch, right, 100% bulk dominant. Okay, so that's the idea to use the rough surface. So this is the result we obtained from the aluminum plate with Teflon coating, but it has no bearing for the nozzle. And this red, this colors, this triangle, inverted triangle, are results we obtained for the rough and smooth cells, but use copper, gold-plated copper instead of a Teflon-plated aluminum. And you see no difference there. And of course, for the rough cell, the exponent increase a lot. Okay, so now you put polymer in for the smooth cell, and you can see that, so that's no polymer, and that's, you put 120 ppm polymer there. Okay, you see a deduction, and this is similar to what Gunther obtained. This PO, 4 million PO, nominal, actually we did light scattering, it's a bit lower than 4 million. Okay, so this is a, and if you plot this at constant Rayleigh number, the Rayleigh number in this case is close to 10, one time, I think it's 7 times 10 to the 9, something. And you see a drop with concentration, similar again to what Gunther found, about 10%. So now you put the rough here, okay. Circle here is the pure, no polymer case, zero pure water case, okay. Because the exponent now is much larger, you remember 0.36, so, but we still use one third for compensation, just compare with the smooth case, okay. And you can see that as you increase the polymer concentration, okay, you see enhanced heat transfer instead of reduced. Okay. And if you plot the this, okay, as a function of concentration, again for constant Rayleigh number, you see that the nozzle initially decreases, but then increases. But the last two, and these two, we let the system sit there for several weeks before we add more polymers there. You know, so we don't know if that has some behavior related to, you know, whatever change in the system. But it's somewhat strange, the job. But otherwise, what we see is that indeed you can see.
You put anything in to prevent bacterial growth?
No.
So it's probably wasn't
enough. I have no
bacteria
idea.
Bacteria love to eat the
really?
Bacteria, they eat this. Well, I don't know, might have been sterile. You know,
okay, so therefore your polymer concentration is kind of low.
Lower, lower.
Yeah, than what? Okay, that could be.
That's
but. Yeah, but if you see for this two polymer concentration for a wide range of Rayleigh number, you see an enhancement. Okay. So one explanation you can offer is that I think this also been offered in the PR paper by Ban Zhen et al. Is that the nozzle, you can sort of decompose your nozzle change into two parts. One is the bulk, and the other is the boundary layer. Okay, and they did DNS with which has no this part, and they found this is a positive. Okay, but if you in our Rayleigh number range with the smooth cell, we found this is less than zero, and as what Gunter found. So then when they, this is of course just hand waving argument. When you put them together, you can see a net increase. I mean, this here, you only see few percent, okay, for the rough, but you need to compare this to the, you know, to the smooth case. Smooth case, you see, 10% decrease. Okay, with smooth cell, same polymer concentration, but now you change it to rough, it becomes, we can get 5% for some Rayleigh number increase. So I think that's the story here. So that's it.
Thank you very much.